Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, the Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
What's up, Sense fans? You're listening to the Buckled Up edition of the Sixth Sense Podcast. Tim's not here to join us in studios this week, but Francois is back. Francois, I see you're rocking the NWA Los Angeles Raiders hat.
That I am. I've been trying to track this hat down ever since I watched the ESPN 30 for 30 film straight out of LA, which was directed by Ice Cube, and I just thought that hat was one of the coolest looking hats. I'm glad I found it. I received it this week, and let me tell you, it's been one of the highlights of the recent past for me, especially given how the Senators have been playing recently.
I'm going to read you a little something right now. This comes to you from the ESPN website, and this is from their power rankings for this past week.
Wait. Let me guess first where the Senators are. I'm going to guess they are lower than 25th.
28th.
28th.
You are correct. All right, so this is what they had to say about the past week. The squad has come completely unglued. Despite a win over New York on Sunday, Ottawa couldn't even sell it for Danny Heatley's return. And not to make too much sport of Eugene Melnyk, but it seems the Senators are going all the way to the bottom.
Well, anyone who thinks this team can't make the playoffs, I encourage should grab a bomb and go blow themselves up. I think it's going to get a whole lot worse before it gets better.
Buckle up, Sens fans. Buckle up. Tim Murray was on the radio this afternoon on Team 1200 Sports Call. And he was quoted as saying that for the past 3 weeks, Ottawa has been trying to desperately to make a deal. Whether it was a big trade, a small trade, major trade, doesn't matter. They've been trying to make a deal, and it's just completely unrealistic for this team to make a deal right now.
Well, I think that's all relative. Because the same people who think it's unrealistic to make a deal also think there's a market for Brian Lee out there. So I think we should take those types of comments with a grain of salt. Hey, man, I'm fed up, okay? We were talking the other day. You know I've totally mentally checked out on the year. The only positive that I can see moving forward for the current season, actually, there are two. Number one, the emergence of Jason Spezza as a legitimate top-line NHL center. Number two, watching a Hall of Fame career in a Senators uniform sort of in Daniel Alfredson in the twilight of his career. Those are the only two things that I can really get excited about when it comes to this Senators hockey.
Daniel Alfredson playing out the string is the only thing that you're excited about right now?
Yeah, man.
That's sad.
Well, what are you excited about anything else? What do we have to look forward to?
What do we have to look forward to? Top 10 pick. The team is doing so poorly. And we're being fed this bull from the ownership that this team is supposed to be better than they are. So
why aren't they?
Why aren't they?
Well, exactly. What are we like? We're a third of the way through the schedule, right?
Yeah, according to, I think it's like sportsclubstats.com, Ottawa has a 5% chance of making the playoffs this season.
Yeah. So I'm just, what can
you're
you
depressed.
Say?
I think that Sharks game took a lot out of you.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I bumped into you first intermission during that game. You weren't too pleased.
Yeah, and then what? I texted you. It was 1-0. I think I texted you. Was it like second intermission after San Jose scored a second goal? Or I texted you, I think, and I was like, if San Jose gets another one, the wheels are going to fall off. Like, sure enough, a minute into the third, Couture pops one, and then like a couple minutes later,
they
pops another
last one. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of been the MO of the team, though, in the last while, right?
I think it's just really sad that you can almost guess how the game is going to unfold before a puck is ever dropped. It's been the same thing all year. If they get behind,
yeah,
they can't play from behind. Look what happened in Montreal the other night.
Yeah, Corey Kluson said that in the media the other day as well. That as soon as this team gets behind it by a goal, they're very, very easy to play against. And that is a problem. Whether that's reflective of the coaching or the personnel is completely open to debate. A lot of people want Corey Kluson canned. And as a fan, I wonder how much rope you give Brian Murray to keep making all these coaching decisions.
Well, I mean, I personally think we're getting to the point now where Murray's had the better part of 3 to 4 years to sort of carry out his vision with this team. And I think he has to wear this. I think he has to own this. I think he has to start taking responsibility for the direction this team has gone in since 2007. And I think it's the classic sort of mistake that a lot of general managers in other sports make too after you win a championship, is overly committing to some players and misidentifying them as essential core players when really they're probably not. And a lot of people criticize all of those trades after their Stanley Cup run, but Dustin Byfuglien and some of those other players, I think, were probably not essential to Chicago sort of moving forward and competing for more Stanley Cups. I think that they realized that Patrick Sharp was more valuable to keep than some of the other guys. After 2007, I mean, look at the contracts that were given out. Look at how well look at how poorly most of them have worked out thus far.
Well, I think that's the difference between Ottawa and Chicago, though, right? Because Chicago did end up flipping some of those assets, or assets such as Buffalo and Andrew Ladd, and they recouped some picks that Ottawa had otherwise traded away during the Muckler years. So Ottawa's farm system, granted, Brian Murray's done an okay job of drafting and rebuilding.
Yeah.
Binghamton's a young team. That's a very young team that's competitive right now in the AHL. Are any of those guys guaranteed of NHL-level success?
Yeah, exactly.
That's open to debate, right?
Are any of those guys blue-chip, can't-miss guys? And I think that is open for debate. But then again, it's not like we've had an abundant amount of top 10 first-round picks in the past few years either, right? So I think to the extent that Brian Murray's made the best out of the picks he's been handed, he's probably done a reasonably good job. I think the issue is that besides drafting, does this guy really have a clue?
The vision of this organization since he took it over is for the team to remain competitive, keep the core intact, and they will try and retool and keep bringing in young players to augment the core that's already here. And for the most part, the only one who's come up in the last 3 years to show for it and played consistently is Erik Karlsson.
Yeah. But, I mean, let's compare. And I'm not a Brian Burke fan. I know you're not either. I know, based on other conversations we've had, we feel he's probably a very overrated GM. Most of it probably, most of the accolades probably, come from himself. The one thing I have to give Brian Burke credit for, and I'm not going to say he's made good moves because he's made terrible moves, but the one thing Brian Burke did when he took over the Leafs job was he was determined to make the team younger and to a certain extent tougher. And he's at least been able to do that in some way, shape, or form. Has he done it well? No. But at least there is a vision in place, and you can see that he's tried to take the necessary steps to work towards that goal. And I don't know if the Senators really have a direction right now. I think it's kind of an ad hoc thing.
It's a weird philosophy, right? Because they're not amongst the haves in the Eastern Conference or the NHL. But it seems like we're trying to win the lottery and wait for that one opportune chance where we can get some opportune playoff brackets. It goes back to Melnick's quote in the paper from, I think it was last week or the week before, where he said, look at Montreal and look what they did last year. They had a goaltender who got hot at the right time and it carried them all the way to the conference finals. And that's not a great model to follow.
No, and the issue that I have with that too is that if Montreal and Philadelphia are the examples from last year that are used for that mentality of, well, get in the playoffs and anything can happen, I'm sorry. Okay, first of all, Philadelphia was not a true 7th or 8th seed or whatever it was. I think we can agree on that. I think they battled injuries all year, and I think we're seeing now this year really what the true potential of the Philadelphia Flyers is or was whatnot last year. The Montreal Canadiens are a far better skating team than we are. Far better. And they have better goaltending than we do, and they did last year. And their top line, you know, with Camilleri, the power play, Markov, everything like that. I mean, they're a team better built for playoff success in the sense that they don't have to rely on opportune matchups to still be effective because they have speed and they have certain playmakers in key positions that can sort of control the outcome of a series. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I think the problem with Ottawa right now is that they have a lot of talent, but not a lot of natural talent. If you look at Ottawa's front six, you say, well, there's Spezza, Alfredson, and Kovalev, and you can't count on Kovalev to show up every second night of the season. And essentially, you're relying upon a banged-up Alfredson and Jason Spezza to carry your offensive load. And everyone else has to work hard to get their offensive opportunities. And right now, Ottawa isn't outworking anybody.
No.
And
but is that because it's a lack of work ethic, or do you think it's a lack of ability that translates as an inability to outwork?
It could be a chemistry issue. It's tough to say. There's so many things that could be wrong with this team. Like, you can go through a lot of guys have battled injuries over the past year. Are they all healthy? A lot of guys have missed a lot of game day skates because they have maintenance days, right?
Because I think in relation to the average of opponents that we play, even some of the lesser opponents, we don't always look particularly fast out on the ice. And one of the things, you know, I talk a lot of hockey with my dad, as you know. One of the observations he's made over the course of the last few years is, for some reason, whenever we're facing a team that sends in a hard, aggressive forecheck, we can't seem to get any transition game going. And if you look at, for example, the Ranger game, they didn't send in a hard forecheck in that game, and we got out okay. You look at the Montreal game, hard forecheck. You look at the San Jose game, hard forecheck, hard backcheck. So a certain inability to operate in tight spaces, I don't know. That it could be one issue, whether it's personnel related or not. Who knows? I think there's a lot of unanswered sort of questions right now that we can ask about this team. And
I just think at this point, you've almost exhausted your motivational opportunities with this team. You've juggled the line combination so often. Peter Regan's been benched. Part of me feels that was inexplicable.
Yeah, no, I agree. I would agree with you.
Corey Clouston came out today in the media after today's morning skate, and he tore a strip off Kovalev, essentially, or he threw him under the bus at the very least.
And, I mean, Kovalev has his faults, but to me, he's also an easy target to go after, right, if you're a coach. He's easy to point the finger at.
Well, he's a lame duck guy, right?
Yeah, exactly, right?
So it's like, anyway, so who gives a shit?
No, but I mean, it's just like, you have to start questioning to what extent the coach really has a command over the room. If he's pointing the finger at the guy who obviously gets a point. Like, Clouston is not delivering us some new breaking news here. He's just, I don't know.
Yeah, but that's your guy. He's not going anywhere, you know? You have to stick up for your players at some point or they'll lose complete respect for you.
Yeah, but who's, like, why is he pointing the finger at Kovalev? I mean, you and I have looked at the numbers, right? You've looked at sort of those hockey sabermetrics type stuff. Would you say second most productive forward?
He's amongst the top five in his goals versus threshold.
Yeah, so, like, you put him on the fourth line and, like, somehow Foligno ends up back on the top line the other night. And
yeah,
of course,
within 10 minutes
makes me look like an idiot because we're yelling at each other on the phone about how the hell does this guy end up on the top line and then he pots a goal.
I think that was my problem, though. It's you bench Peter Regan so Bobby Butler can get a spot amongst the top six. And then within 10 minutes of the second game that Butler's playing, he's off the top line playing with fourth line talent.
Yeah, and Foligno, who's done essentially nothing all year, ends up on the first line.
But he scores a power play goal. Fitting.
Yeah, exactly. Fitting. Exactly, and that'll basically he'll last on the top line now for probably about a week or so. That'll buy him a week.
It's just weird how a number of players are responsible for having bad years, veteran players, and they've kind of escaped the criticism within the city, whether it's from the mainstream staff. Guys like Chris Phillips has been absolutely brutal this year.
Oh yeah,
that really hasn't come into question.
I mean, it's getting to the point with Phillips, and I don't want to go on too much of a tangent here, but I mean, based on how poorly he's played this year, can you really justify bringing him back at any cost?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, like...
Oh, I guess if you're not a Phillies fan,
will.
That's a silver lining to this
but
year.
But they will, for sentimental reasons and whatnot. I would see... Oh, mind you... Sorry, let me rephrase that. If Brian Murray is still the GM, I would see Chris Phillips coming back for a small pay cut for sentimental reasons and whatnot.
My problem with that is if you're unwilling to bring Anton Volchenkov back, you have absolutely no excuse for bringing Chris Phillips back for how poorly he's played.
That's true.
Granted,
it's a bad team all around. I think we can agree. But, I mean, he's been standout.
Well, he's lost a step.
Yeah, he's been very
bad.
He's
not a top-pairing defenseman anymore.
No. I think he's still the type of guy that if you're, you know, a top half of your conference type team, he could be a useful guy on the penalty kill, maybe third pair or second pair, depending on who he's playing with. But given the current roster mix of the Ottawa Senators right now, I just don't see how you justify tying up some salary into Chris Phillips, especially given the pipeline of defensive prospects that we have in our system right now.
And he has the worst value, replacement value on the team. He's the most easily replaceable. According to the Sabermetric hockey stats, most easily replaceable player on our team right now.
Yeah.
And that's without even considering the monetary figure attached to his name. And that's sad, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But will this team reward loyalty?
Like, it's almost like Chris Phillips is... He's the face of the Senators' season so far, right? It's like if you had to personify...
Yeah,
well, you know, true. You yeah, understand what I'm trying
he
to say.
Personifies the regression of this franchise.
Yeah, he does. He does, because that guy went from being sort of a top pair shutdown guy 2 years ago to being Albert Haynesworth.
No, but he's not the only veteran who should not
absolutely
have to face
not.
Wrath. Like, you can go down the line, right?
I think the only guy that gets a free pass is Alfredson.
Well,
in terms of the veterans, right?
Yeah. Well, I'd agree Spezza as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
and
but I mean, the reason why I say you can count on one hand the number of bad games that Jay's had this year, right? Like, Alfredson's probably had some bad games this year, but you have to give Alfredson a free pass. I mean, it's like sort of Brett Favre type.
Allegedly,
yeah.
So. But he hasn't scored in 8 games heading into tonight's game against the Rangers. If this team starts to bottom out a bit and they can't get it together, I really question what the team's going to do. In terms of, are they going to go status quo to the deadline, wait and see if things turn around, or if they're going to be progressive and say, all right, well, this is it. This is how far the core got us. Are we going to start shipping guys out of town, maximizing value, and rebuilding like that way? Are they going to clear cap space? And because one of the concerns I have right now is that I'm not concerned about ticket sales this season for the rest of the year. If Ottawa decides to rebuild, I'm not worried about ticket sales for this year. I'm worried about retaining season ticket holders for next season.
And the other issue is, I think the average hockey fan in Ottawa is smart enough to realize that this is a team spinning its tires right now, and there's only so much, you know, so many tickets that an individual is willing to buy to go watch a team that has no upside.
Well, they don't have any direction, I wouldn't
exactly.
say. There is some upside there. It's just... Yeah. Are they going to stay old? It's the third oldest team in the NHL. And are you going to keep some of these guys at the expense of some younger players? I think to listen to guys like Bruce Garriock say that fans in this city will not support a loser is kind of wrong. I think it has to do with a lot of games are televised on television, and fans don't want to have to pay $100 to go see this team. If you can put a young, exciting product on the ice, people will pay to see that. But what Ottawa's putting on the ice right now is unentertaining.
That's garbage.
It's terrible hockey.
It's actually borderline unwatchable.
Well, they can't even score. If you're paying to watch these guys put the puck in the net, yeah. Like,
it's a far cry from the pizza line days.
No, exactly.
Where do we go from here? Is it you cannot allow Brian Murray to be the general manager of this team come to training deadline?
If yeah, I would agree with that. He's a lame duck GM. This is the last year of his deal.
Yeah, I mean,
I think his nephew Tim is the incumbent if they decide to keep it in house. And if tough decisions have to be made and they decide to rebuild, I don't think Brian Murray is the guy for the job.
No,
because he has loyalty to the current core. He's coached them. He's been the general manager here for 3 years. Tough decisions have to be made. And I'd rather see someone come in now who doesn't necessarily have the loyalty to this group of players to make these tough decisions.
You know what would be really interesting to look at, actually, and I just thought of this, is individuals who have moved from a coaching position with an organization into a front office position, so from coach to GM. We have Brian Murray, Pat Quinn, I think, did it with the Leafs, Jacques Martin in Florida. It'd be interesting to look at sort of the subsequent performance of those franchises after that person has moved from a coaching position into a GM position. I bet you'd find that there'd be a bit of a negative trend there with the performance of those franchises after such a move has occurred.
Because of personal bias. You think it'd be a lot like an assistant coach overtaking like the head coaching position, right? Because
yeah.
Like John Paddock kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, I think this whole goaltending thing stops now. You have to try and see if you can get anything for LeClaire. He gets two out of every three games. None of this business with going, unless LeClaire gets shelled, none of this business with the tandem situation anymore. I think there are teams out there that would give something. It might not be much. They would give something for LeClaire come deadline. Philadelphia being a team, I think that would be very interested in bringing LeClaire in.
Well, Bobrovsky's played really well. I think maybe Tampa.
Potentially Tampa. Yeah.
Might be a team that you could target.
But yeah, I mean, I think there are some teams out there who might give up third round, fourth round pick, whatever it may be, to bring in LeClaire. I think
he's gone at the end of the year anyway, so who cares?
But if you can get something back for him.
Sure.
The teams.
Well, we're not in a position to like guys go for nothing.
No, exactly. It's like you're saying, you have to try and maximize the return on everybody.
Yeah. And I think you have to do that regardless of whether it's tomorrow or whether it's at the trade deadline. You have a lot of lame duck assets right now that aren't, that maybe they shouldn't be retained, but maybe they will be.
But I think strangely enough, though, a lot of these assets as individual parts are probably quite attractive for some teams looking to add a little bit of depth come playoff time. Phillips, Kuba.
That's what I was writing in a blog this afternoon, just in a quick blurb. I kind of compared it to that Gestalt theory. That's like the sum of the parts isn't greater than the whole, but I think in Ottawa's case it is. Because these guys, you know, they might be individually like talented players, but they haven't come together as a whole, and the units suffered, immeasurably suffered. Like, I think a lot of guys are, I think a lot of guys are movable. Like, Mahalik's been absolutely brutal this season.
Yeah,
but I think that's a guy who some teams might look at and say, hey, that guy could be a second line or first line player.
Penalty killer, second line, power play.
Yeah, like maybe that guy could be a fit on a Pittsburgh or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, just to play with Crosby. But Chris Phillips has had a bad year, but I think a team would take Washington. A flyer on that guy because he has name recognition, value, and he has a reputation for being a shutdown defenseman on some decent Ottawa Senators teams from the early to mid-2000s.
The golden era.
The golden era.
These ain't your father's Senators anymore.
No, they aren't your father's Senators anymore. That's the problem. I was having a conversation with a couple friends when I was at the San Jose game. I didn't mention this to you earlier, but one of the things one of my friends brought up was that if you had to start from scratch with the current Ottawa Senators roster, you'd be hard-pressed to name three or four guys that you would keep to build that team from scratch.
I entirely agree with you. I think if you can get a decent return for anybody, I don't think there's a single untouchable on this team. I think in a perfect world, you don't move Spezza because number one centers are hard to come by. But
and you're not going to get a top dollar for a guy who's,
then again,
who's making $7 million.
Then again, if you're rebuilding, you're rebuilding. So if you can get a decent package back, even for a guy as good as Spezza, you might want to swallow hard and consider doing it, right? I don't think there's a single untouchable on this team. Sorry to all the Erik Karlsson enthusiasts out there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about Karlsson, actually.
I'm starting to think this is as good as he's
going to
get.
I hate going back to the sabermetric stats every time we're analyzing a player here, but in terms of value, he was actually Ottawa's highest-rated skater.
If that's based on point production, then I would understand, right? Because average NHL defenseman's point production, Karlsson puts up a decent amount of points on the power play, probably racks up some secondary assists and even strength and whatnot. There's no doubting the guy's offensive ability. He's a great offensive defenseman. The issue with him is his defensive awareness, his defensive positioning. He bails out on the puck. He's afraid to get hit in his own end. And oftentimes actually in transition and a couple times at the San Jose game, he hangs on to the puck too long when he should be hitting a forward with an outlet pass.
You can attribute that to being inexperienced.
Yes. But, of course, but no amount of experience is going to fill out a 5'7" frame.
Well, that's the problem, right? Because he is small. He's, what, 170 pounds?
Yeah.
5'11", 6 feet.
If that.
If that. I do have legitimate concerns that this kid's never going to fill out, and he will forever be known as a defensive liability in our own end. If you can maximize trade value for that guy and get like a young, comparable defenseman in terms of age and salary, then...
Or even a blue chip forward.
Yeah.
Well, we have a bevy of defensemen in our system right now, so I'm just... I wouldn't be too...
None of which are assured of being NHL players, though. That's the problem with the Sens right now, is, yeah, you can hang your hat on all these prospects, but no one's come up to the level and overachieved. Like, you can even argue, too.
So then, well, like,
Carlson's been sad for, like, 2 or 3 games this year.
Yeah.
Already as a healthy scratch. So, assuming that any of Ottawa's young defensemen are going to come up in the next 2 or 3 years and be, like, a force to be reckoned with, is kind of...
So, like, you'd be thinking someone along the lines of, like, a Ryan Suter or some... Just
to throw out a name? Well, if you could ever package Carlson to get a guy like a Tyler Myers or something. Like, a better...
Yeah. A better all-around...
Not the Buffalo would ever do something like that, but... Yeah. You know, if you could package him to get him, or even if Shea Weber's available, and you can package Carlson and someone else to get a Shea Weber and lock up a franchise defenseman for the foreseeable future, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
No, that's a fair point.
But it's only under those circumstances, right? I wouldn't move him just for the sake of moving him. I'd only move him if you're getting back a better player.
Better all-around defenseman.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of having two Sens fans dissect what's going on with the Ottawa Senators right now, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Down Goes Brown, the highly popular Toronto Maple Leafs blog. So we'll get a little Toronto perspective on what's going on in the nation's capital. So stick around. We'll be right back. Whenever your love can find me, it breaks through the walls that bind me. It's breaking the walls that bind me. When I go out in the world, I'm in my case. Welcome back, Sens fans. We're joined on the line by Sean McAdoo from Down Goes Brown. Sean, welcome to the Sixth Sense podcast. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
Things could be a little bit better in the nation's capital. Obviously, you can appreciate that living in Ottawa. What do you think of Ottawa's situation right now?
I don't know. Do you want the good news or the bad news?
Nah, just give it to us straight.
The good news is you got your own draft pick, which is nice. That's about as far as I think I can really go realistically on the good news. I was down on the Senators coming into the season. I don't do a ton of predictions and analysis and that sort of thing on my site, but I know there. I remember there was a post during the preseason where I made a joke about the Leafs and the Senators both being teams that were going to miss the playoffs, and I had a bunch of Senator fans sort of, you know, kind of call me on it and say, how can you say we're going to miss the playoffs? We're fifth place. We brought in some good players. You know, and just realistically, I had to kind of look at and explain that, you know, in looking at the team, I think you could see this coming. I really feel like last year's team was, you know, a team that maybe fans and the organization overrated a little bit based on the one big win streak that they had in the middle of the year. You know, which was largely driven by Brian Elliott just playing absolutely out of his mind. And, you know, I think maybe there was a little bit of extra optimism going in that they could maintain that. And, you know, I felt all along like this was not a playoff team. And that's not, you know, and I don't mean that in the sense that they were going to take a major dive. I mean, historically, you go from fifth place to ninth or tenth place, that's not a big jump. That's 6 or 8 points. And, you know, I just really felt like it was a team that was going to take a bit of a step back. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, when I do make predictions, I got to tell you, I'm usually wrong. I'm wrong a lot more than I'm right. But this year, the team, you know, the way the Senators are playing out, it's pretty much almost exactly the way that, you know, that I saw it coming.
That being said, moving forward, if you were to sort of pick a situation as a fan that you'd rather find yourself in, Would you rather be a Leaf fan right now or a Senators fan?
Well, it's tough. I mean, it being a Leaf fan right now is not easy. I'll be real honest on that. It's the Leafs are in a bad spot. The team is not good. The prospect cupboard is not very full, and not having a pick this year is a really it's a disaster, frankly, is what it is. That said, to be real honest, I think I'd rather be a Leaf fan right now. And the reason I say that is because as much as I think there are some problems, roster-wise, and as much as I think Ottawa probably has some advantages as far as roster strength and maybe even as far as some of the prospects, I think when you look at the organizations, there's just certain advantages that the Toronto Maple Leafs have, and there's certain disadvantages that the Senators are going to have to fight. And I really think that that's, as a Leaf fan, I feel like 3, 4, 5 years from now, I think they're going to be in a better spot than the Senators are. I think the Senators are in a position where if they choose the right path over the next little while and they make some tough decisions, they could be in pretty good shape. I'm just not convinced from watching this team and watching this organization that they're going to be willing to do that.
So if Richard Petty came out tomorrow and said, buckle up, we're going all the way, you wouldn't invest a ton of faith into that?
No, not a whole lot. And that's funny, but that's part of it. I mean, the Senators really right now, they remind me of the Leafs during the Ferguson era.
Oh, God.
Where you had Petty saying, every now and then showing up and saying ridiculous things, and Larry Tannenbaum, and there was, this feeling that the ship was just drifting. There wasn't a plan. Nobody knew what the strategy was. Nobody knew what they were aiming for. It just seemed like eighth place would be good enough, and that was as far as it had been thought through. And I don't think the Senators are at that point yet, but that's what they remind me of. I mean, the Leafs under Brian Burke, you can criticize Burke, and I've done it a ton. You can point at moves that he's made and say that that move's going to cost them 5 years on the rebuild. But at least with Brian Burke, there's a plan. Any Leaf fan can point and say, I know what Brian Burke is trying to do. I know what Brian Burke, I can see the plan as he sees it. Whether I think it's the right plan or not, there is a strategy, and he's following it. And he's going to follow it right off a cliff if he has to. With the Senators, you kind of look at it and you go, well, what are they aiming for? Are they trying to be good this year, or are they trying to be good 2 years from now? Is it 5 years? I just don't have a sense that, I don't have a sense that Sens fans know, and I don't have a sense that the organization knows.
Well, when Eugene Melnyk's coming out publicly and making claims that Montreal's model from last year, where they crept into the playoffs as a late seed and kind of lucked in with some hot goaltending and got into the conference finals, that lining up all your ducks in a row like that can happen once in a while. But it just seems like Ottawa's playing for that one opportunity to go all the way. And I don't know if that's the proper model to follow.
Yeah, I mean, the Montreal, what happened last year with Montreal, I spent years as a Leaf fan kind of rolling my eyes at this whole idea of, well, can they make the playoffs or not? Because every year I'd say, well, yeah, maybe they make the playoffs, but they're going to be eighth place, and they're just going to get destroyed by Pittsburgh or Washington or whoever in the first round. And then Montreal and Philadelphia came along last year, and, much like Edmonton had done a few years before, kind of showed that, hey, anything can happen. And it's true, and that's what's great about the playoffs, and that's why, you do everything you can as an organization to make the playoffs. But anything can happen is not a strategy. Anything can happen is not a, that's not a game plan. That's not something you build a team around. Melnyk is, I know he thinks he's helping. I know he thinks he's, coming across as the, calm, optimistic hand on the wheel. But, I got to tell you, if I was a Sens fan, I would cringe when I heard that. And I know lots of Sens fans, and I know that they were cringing. And, I don't know. I mean, if pointing to Montreal is nice, but that's not a strategy.
Yeah, I mean, one of the issues that comes up oftentimes when I talk to other Sens fans, and everyone seems to be, or at least the ones that are the real, you know, dedicated following Sens fans and whatnot, everyone seems to be of the same page that, you know what, it might be time to make some hard decisions, make some tough moves, and go with the rebuild. And the question that inevitably always comes up is ownership and management ready to do that? And personally, I don't have a whole lot of confidence that they are. That being said, I mean, who would you rather have behind the helm of a team right now, Brian Murray or Brian Burke, if you can compare the two?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been a huge fan of Brian Burke for, you know, since he came in. I fully supported when they hired him. I thought it was a great move. I really thought he was going to be the guy to turn it around. I think he's done some good things. I think he's done a few bad things, and I think he's done one or two things that are going to be complete disasters. But yeah, that said, I'm no fan of Brian Murray. I mean, I look at what he's done in Ottawa, and, you know, to be real honest, I don't understand how he still has a job. I don't understand, you know, I guess what I don't understand, or what I fear, you know, if I was a Sens fan, is that he's reached a point with Melnyk where he's just got Melnyk's ear, and there's really nothing that he can do, and no mistake that he can make that's going to cost him his job. And the reason that worries me is, you know, Brian Murray he's not a guy that he's going to sit down and say, I'm going to build this team out for 5 years down the road. Brian Murray is in a win-now mode, or at least a, you know, try-to-win-now mode. You know, as what I think Ottawa needs is to say, we need a clean slate, and we need that from the top to bottom in the organization. I don't think that Brian Murray is going to be the guy who's going to go to Eugene Melnyk and tell him that, because there's a good chance that Melnyk's going to look at him and say, okay, if we need to clean house, we're going to start with your job. So I think Murray is going to be telling Melnyk, no, but look at Montreal. Look, we can do it. We can be like those guys. And I don't get the sense that Melnyk's a strong enough personality as a hockey guy to see through that and say, you know what, maybe we got to go in a different direction. So, you know, it's like I say, I get back to, you know, the Ferguson era. I don't think Brian Murray is John Ferguson. He's a lot smarter than that. But, you know, I feel like it's at a point where when it gets to, you know, playing the politics and protecting turf and telling the owner what he wants to hear, I really do see a lot of shades of what the Leafs went through a few years ago.
Prior to buying the team, Melnyk was an accredited Leafs fan. He always talked about that. You figure an owner who was a Leafs fan could at least recognize some of the similarities between this version of the Senators and the way the Leafs kind of conducted business in the early mid-2000s when they were trading picks and moving prospects to kind of get veteran talent, older veteran talent that was maybe past its prime. One of the things that I want to see Ottawa do is kind of maybe not get a John Ferguson clone, but at least get someone who's been in player development, has some fresh and young ideas, and just start from scratch, have no loyalty to the current core that probably needs to be moved. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. I'd advise you against getting a John Ferguson clone. That probably won't work out all that well, but yeah, I mean, bring in somebody with some fresh ideas. I mean, that, to me, I think is a big part of the problem. It's you know, like you said, and it's my impression too, the fans are ready for this. The fans are ready to do the rebuild. But, you know, is Brian Murray going to go to Eugene Melnyk and say, this roster's a mess, we got to start over? I don't think he's going to do that. So, you know, it really requires Melnyk to put his foot down and see what needs to be done. You know, there's no more Roy Mlakar. You know, there isn't that kind of other strong voice in the on the hockey side that can say, you know, maybe we need to look at this. So, you know, who knows? If enough pressure comes from the fans, then sure. You know, we used to always hear in Toronto that, well, you know, as long as you keep selling out the building, there's never going to be any changes. And in Toronto, that's dumb, because there's so many sources of revenue, and there's so, you know, the waiting list is so long, and there's so much business that's buying the tickets, that, you know, encouraging fans to cancel the tickets is a waste. It's not that's not how the economics works for that team. In Ottawa, they might work. And, I mean, we're seeing the crowds and, you know, some of the attendance figures are pretty depressing. If it keeps going in that direction, maybe that's at the point where Melnick says, you know what, we gotta roll a grenade into this thing and blow it up and start over. I'm not convinced that he's going to know to do it, and I'm also not convinced that he's going to be willing to lose the money to do it, because I think that, you know, you build a team that's going to finish last for a couple years, I think you're going to see a ton of empty seats in that arena.
Well, Melnick would tell you to go grab your own grenade and blow yourself up, because you just said to blow it up.
Yep. No, I know. I remember that. And he's definitely a guy who thinks he's quite the soundbite.
I think my biggest concern with Melnick, kind of talking from like getting a fresh face and new ideas, one of the guys who I was kind of championing was Craig Billington, who's the assistant general manager in Colorado. And I think their turnaround from the Joe Sakic era has been quick. They've drafted well. They've developed their players well. And they've made some tough decisions on some veteran guys like Scott Hannon getting recently traded to Washington for Fleischman. I think they made some tough decisions, even Wolski. My problem with Melnick is that I don't have a lot of confidence in that guy to hire someone of that ilk. I think he's more of a name guy, and I look back at the World Junior time that it was in Ottawa and all the rumors circulating around Pat Quinn. I just feel like it's Melnick's style to go out and get a name guy, because you have to get those headlines as an Ottawa franchise.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, Melnick, he likes the headlines, and he likes to make the headlines, and you know, I just get a feeling, and I got to say, I'm basing this on nothing. I have no inside information. I have no access to any of these guys. I just, you know, in watching the way that, you know, Melnick and that the franchise behaves, I just get this feeling that, you know, Melnick has just decided that Brian Murray is the smartest hockey guy he knows, and he is going to listen to what Brian Murray tells him. And if Brian Murray tells him this is the direction we're going, then, you know, he's going to go along for the ride, and he's going to, you know, strap in and fasten his seatbelt, and off they go. And, you know, I think there's a certain point where you got to take a step back and say, am I getting good advice here? Am I getting the best, you know, the best hockey information that I can, or do I need to look elsewhere? And I'm just, you know, I'm not sold. I've never been impressed with Melnick as an owner. I know the history. I know why Senator fans embraced him initially. I, you know, I know what a mess it was that he came in and cleaned up, but I've just never got a sense that this is a guy who is going to lead a sports franchise to a championship.
Sean, I'd be remiss if I didn't use this opportunity to talk to you about Phil Kessel. I know I saw your tweet this afternoon. It was a Howard Berger article that you linked to, and it had to do with calling out Phil Kessel, I think, for the first time since he's probably been involved with the Leafs organization. Did you want to hit on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's always so tough to talk about Kessel, because you can't, it is impossible to talk about Phil Kessel and the Maple Leafs without talking about the trade. And that's, you know, that's not fair to him. He didn't make that trade. And, you know, it does make it tough, because as soon as he has a slump, as soon as he has a few bad games, you know, you start pointing the finger at him, and it's impossible for the subject not to come back to that trade that Brian Berg made, giving up all those picks. You know, at the end of the day, that trade, we're not going to know who won or lost that trade for 10 years. You know, you had, you know, three draft picks of guys who, you know, aren't going to be significant NHL players. You know, even Tyler Seguin isn't going to be what he's going to be for a few more years. Phil Kessel's still only 23. There's so much time for this to play out that it's impossible to say, you know, who won or lost, and it's a distraction to get into that. You know, but it's really hard not to, and it's really hard not to think of the price tag whenever you watch Phil Kessel play. The bottom line is, you know, Phil Kessel can score goals. He's done it his whole career. He did it last year. He's done it this year, you know, initially at least. He's a streaky player. So it's very difficult to look at his numbers 27 games into the season and say, well, they're not where they should be, because, you know, one hot streak and five games from now, it's a totally different picture. But the bottom line is, you know, Leaf fans, and now we've had a season to watch Phil Kessel. We saw him when he was in Boston. We know what he is. He's a goal scorer. He's got, you know, offensive talent as far as scoring goals that you can't teach, and that, you know, 95% of the players in the league will never have. But that's all that he is. You know, he's not a playmaker. He's not a guy that really makes people around him better. He's certainly not a guy who does anything at all on the physical side. He's not a guy at this point in his career who does anything on the defensive side. He's purely an offensive player. And so, as you know, as tough as it may be, and as much as you don't want to, you know, get into hyperbole and start talking about, you know, was the trade terrible, was, you know, how much did it cost them, the fact of the matter is, when you look at Phil Kessel, I don't think it's unfair to look at his offensive numbers and say, you know what, they're not good enough right now. And I don't think it's unfair to watch a game and come back and say, you know what, we give up a ton to get Phil Kessel. He's the best on the team. He's the highest paid forward by a mile. And he was invisible tonight. And that's not good enough. And, you know, Berger's article today, he was talking about, you know, where's the fire? When is this guy going to show something, you know, seem like he cares? Now, you know, Phil Kessel is not, he's never going to be Wendell Clark. He's never going to be Cam Neely. He's not Rick Tockett. He's not that kind of guy. So, you know, you're never going to see him go out and throw hits and start fights and do all that other stuff that some players can do when the puck's not going in. But, you know, there are just nights where you'd like to see something. He's a very perimeter player, and he is a guy that when the puck's not going in for him, he really doesn't bring anything else to the table. And, you know, I think that the criticism of him, I didn't agree with everything Berger said, but I think in general, I think the criticism's fair. I think some of the criticism going on among Leaf fans, because as much as, you know, Berger talks about how this is the first time anyone's criticized, well, Leaf fans have been picking his game apart pretty much since he got here. You know, I think that there's a bunch of legitimate questions, and I think it's totally fair game to point a finger at him. He's, you know, whether he likes it or not, with everything they gave up to get him, with the contract they gave him, with all the expectations, you know, he's got to be a leader on this team, and he's got to be the go-to guy. And there's been way too many games this year where he's been nowhere to be found.
You know, I agree with you to a certain extent. I mean, the criticism of Kessel, you can only take it so far because he didn't make the trade and whatnot. Brian Burke did make the trade. So if Toronto bottoms out and Boston gets another top five pick this year, I mean, to what point is Brian Burke's job with the Maple Leafs still secure?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's look, I mean, Burke, he just had his two-year anniversary with the Leafs. Now, he was brought in on a six-year contract, and he was brought in on a rebuild. So it's, you know, 2 years is too early to start talking about, you know, do we get rid of this guy and bring in someone else? But, yeah, I mean, if it ends up being another lottery pick this year, then I think you're going to start to hear those whispers, because one of two things will happen. Either he'll have fired Ron Wilson by then, and, you know, we all know when you're a GM in trouble, the first line of defense is fire the coach. So he'll have either played that card, or he'll have showed that he's not going to play that card under any circumstances, in which case, you know, the fingers are going to start pointing at him anyways. You know, if they're a bottom five team again this year, then I think it will be fair to start asking questions about whether Brian Burke's the right guy long term. Not so much because of the Kessel trade, not because of the pick they gave up, but because, you know, we will now be, you know, two full years and most of 3 years into his time, and the team's not getting any better. And, you know, Brian Burke, my big issue with Brian Burke, the one, you know, the criticism that I always come back to is when he came to Toronto with all that fanfare and as bad as things had been in the Ferguson era, if Brian Burke had come in and said, I'm doing a total rebuild, I'm going to just blow this thing right up, we're going to stink for 3 years, but I got a plan, and we're going to come out the other side, and 5 years from now, we're going to have built something that, you know, they can turn into a contender. Fans would have absolutely followed that. But instead, he came in, and for whatever reason, he decided he could fast-track it. And even recently, he said the same thing. He said, you know, I'm in a hurry. Nobody knows why he's in a hurry, and nobody knows why he seemed to feel, looking at the roster that he inherited, that he could do this in 1 or 2 years instead of 4 or 5. But he did. And every decision, every major decision he's made revolves around that. The Phil Kessel trade is a perfect example, but, you know, holding on to Thomas Caberle instead of trading him for, you know, picks and prospects when you had the opportunity, that's a move that you make when you think you're going to make the playoffs in 1 or 2 years. You know, most of the trades he's made, even though he's been bringing in younger players, he always has this preference to bring in guys who are NHL-ready, not picks, not prospects. That's the kind of thing you do when you think you're going to make the playoffs in 1 or 2 years. And he has said on repeated occasions that he thinks that this team, and he said it in the summer, he says, we're a playoff team. Well, they're not close to a playoff team. And, you know, there's really no indication that they're getting any closer to being a playoff team. So, you know, the Phil Kessel trade, it could still work out. I mean, you could give up two top five picks, and it could still be a win because Phil Kessel might score 40 goals a year for 10 years, and the two guys the Bruins get might not turn into anything. But the bottom line is Brian Burke's been telling us for, you know, two-plus years now that we're very close to being a playoff team, and we're nowhere close. And, you know, absolutely, I think he's got this whole year at a minimum. But, you know, I think if you get through this year and things aren't looking any better, and certainly if you start getting into the early stages of next year, after he's had another draft and another free agency, and it's not getting any better, then, yeah, absolutely, you're going to see fingers start to point at him. And, at the way he goes now, if things don't turn around, I'd be surprised if he makes it to his four-year anniversary.
I'm just looking over the Cap Geek numbers right now, Sean, and one of the things that I've noticed, a similarity between Ottawa and Toronto, is that both teams have a ton of cap space coming off the books for next season, or for this offseason, this summer. Do you think that that's part of like the misevaluation or an unforeseen consequence of the cap that maybe Brian Burke and Brian Murray didn't see, is that a lot of teams these days are locking up their good young players to long-term contracts, regardless of whether or not it's probably the right thing to do for the franchise? There's just such an onus on keeping these young players that maybe Brian Murray and Brian Burke didn't foresee that, and they were expecting better talent to be available on the open market.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about Brian Murray, but Brian Burke, you know, essentially said that. And, you know, when he made the Phil Kessel deal, started to question, like, hey, why are we trading around first-round picks? He basically said, hey, look, we're a big-market team. We're always going to be able to spend to the cap. We got money to spend. And he, you know, one of his infamous sound bites was, July 1st is our draft. Well, you know, at the time he said that, you know, we were in an era in the NHL just a couple years out of the lockout. We were seeing better players and younger players than ever before going to free agency. You know, so if that trend had continued, maybe it would have made sense. Maybe it would make sense for Brian Burke to say, you know what, I could trade my picks to get good players on my roster, because on July 1st, I'm going to be able to spend at least as much as everyone. I won't be able to outspend because of the cap, but you know what, a lot of teams aren't going to be able to compete, so I'm going to free up a lot of cap space, and I'm going to hit the market. But just like you guys said, suddenly we got into this trend of teams just locking up their young players. And, you know, you look at last year where if you take out Ilya Kovalchuk, there really wasn't a ton in free agency. Certainly not of, you know, late 20s franchise players. And you look at the free agent crop that's coming this year, and it's even worse. So, you know, It's Brian Burke said July 1st is our draft, and last year on July 1st, the Leafs got Colby Armstrong and Brett Lebda. That's not a very good draft. So, you know, whether Brian Murray's making the same mistake or whether it's, you know, something, or whether he's just going for win now because, you know, he feels like he has to keep his job, I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I think I can see where Brian Burke was thinking on that, but I think it was, you know, it's been proven to be a miscalculation, and I think it's costing the Leafs quite a bit.
Well, Sean, on behalf of Francois, I just want to thank you for coming on the show. But before we let you go, would you be cool doing just a couple quick hit questions with us?
Sure.
All right. Well, what's up with Phaneuf's hair?
I don't know. I haven't seen it since he came back. I mean, has he changed it, or is he still doing the kind of faux hawk?
Yeah, it's like that balding faux hawk thing that's going on.
Receding hair,
yeah.
Faux hawk.
Well, I mean, if you know, if Elisha likes it, then who am I to criticize?
Is Brad Richards in a Maple Leafs uniform this summer?
Don't tell us what you hope. No, I hope? I like Brad Richards as a player, but, you know, realistically, do I want to see them give up a ton to trade for him and re-sign him? No. Do I want to see them sign him as a free agent to some ridiculous 10-year contract because he's the only good player out there? No. So, you know, I hope that they have the discipline. You know, I'd love to see it at a reasonable price. I just don't see a scenario where it's going to be reasonable, so I hope they have the discipline to walk away.
Who had the more offensive statement of the week? Don Cherry with his Pinko comment or Darren Pang with his white way?
Yeah, I mean, the Pang thing was, it was funny. It wasn't, you know, I was actually surprised at how quickly he had to apologize and how big an issue it became. You know, as far as Cherry, like I said it on Twitter, I'm a Cherry guy. You know, I've come too far. I've been a Don Cherry guy for 20 years now, and you know what? At this point, he's, like I said on Twitter, he's reached Axl Rose status with me. It doesn't matter how crazy he gets. It doesn't matter how what kind of weird stuff he's doing. I got his back. So, you know, this Pinko stuff, you know, was it ridiculous and dumb? Yeah, of course it was. But, you know, that's Don Cherry, and I'm okay with it.
Is Brian Murray, the Ottawa Senators GM, come the end of the year?
I think he will be.
Oh man. You couldn't tell us what we wanted to hear?
Sorry, yeah.
Is Ron Wilson the coach of the Maple Leafs through the end of the year?
I could, you know what, I wouldn't be shocked, put it this way, I'd be shocked if he was the coach on opening night next year. You know, does he make it through to the last game of the season? Yeah, maybe, but I think by the draft, no. I'd be very, barring some sort of really surprising turnaround that I don't see any evidence is going to happen, I don't think Burke's going to have a choice.
Last question for you, Sean. Do you have any Kyle Wellwood fat jokes off the top of your head?
No, not off the top of my head. I used one in the column last week. I, you know, tried to break it out. It's tough. It's, you know, he's off in the KHL now. You know, it was fun when he was this NHL player with a chip on his shoulder. You know, kind of strutting around like he had really got one over on the Leafs, and you know, that, because that's where that all started. You know, we used to poke fun at him when he was with the Leafs, and then he went to Vancouver, and that was fine. But it was when he comments about, well, you know, I'm another guy that the Leafs let go, and look what I'm doing now. That's when it was kind of like, oh, okay, well, then, you know, now we're gonna open fire on this guy. And I don't know, it's just it's not as fun now that you know that he's, you know, freezing cold in Russia with, you know, 5 points in 20 games or whatever it is that he has. So, you know, I'm not saying I won't break him out every now and then, but I'm, you know, I'm trying to phase him out a little bit.
Well, Sean, thanks for coming on the program.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Sean.
We hope you enjoyed your time. What do you have coming up this week for Down Goes Brown?
I got a post coming tomorrow, which is, oh, I've handed it in already. What did I write about? It was signs that your team has quit on you. Apropos to, you know, Ron Wilson and maybe Corey Clouston too. signs that your players have are already mailing it in.
All right, can't wait. All right, Sean, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, have
guys,
a good night.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Up on the stairs, we spoke of was and when, although I wasn't there. He said I was his friend, which came as some surprise. I spoke into his eyes. I thought you died.
All right, welcome back, Sens fans, to the Sixth Sens podcast. That was a really great interview, I thought, with Sean McAdoo from Down Goes Brown. I personally really enjoyed it. Graham, yourself?
He's on the same page as us.
I thought that was really interesting, because oftentimes when we talk either on the podcast or off the podcast, and oftentimes it's always like, well, if we see this going on and like this guy sees this going on, like what the hell is wrong with the brain trust of this franchise? And I thought, like, from the perspective of a Leaf fan, he's kind of seeing a lot of the same things going on with the Senators as we are.
Oh, it's red flags.
He's
had to deal with it over the past 10, 15 years.
Exactly. And it's like, at what point, it's like everyone that I've talked to about this situation right now, I haven't heard anyone. Everyone's pretty much on the same page with this thing. And you have a Leaf fan who's on the same page with this thing. So, like, how much longer do we continue parading down the rosy road to shit before we make a decision on this thing, you know?
I'm going to be apoplectic if there's like another Mike Conry, Chris Campoli deal in the works, because that kind of stuff should not be happening.
I'm
in
done.
This franchise. Oh,
if they do it, I'm done.
Well, that's just completely sensational of you to say.
You know I won't be done, but I'm going to say that I'm done. It'll help me sleep tonight.
But this is a team that is... it's like there's a 5% chance. And granted, the Eastern Conference is so bad that maybe they can go on a bit of a run, right? Like, they have a little bit of talent, and yes, it's not inconceivable that they can make the playoffs, but at no point should this team be buying to get back into the picture.
I'm just looking at my hat right now. I've put it on the table.
Would you see some parallels between the Ottawa Senators and, like, the Oakland Raiders of football in, like, the past 10 years or so? With, like, Al Davis, he's just lost it entirely. He's brought in some huge busts, like D'Angelo Hall and other players, signed other players to massive contracts, Randy like Moss. Aging veterans, Randy Moss. And the thing has just been, like, a total flop for the past almost 10 years, right? Like, since they made the Super Bowl against the Bucs, what was that, 2004?
Yeah, and their drafting has been kind of porous as well.
Jamarcus.
Yeah, but and Bay, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like we see these poor decisions. We see this pattern happen time and time again. It's not only restricted to hockey. Oh, it's going on in other sports.
Blue Jays were the same way, trying to compete with the Red Sox and the Yankees. They were trying to outspend.
Orioles, Baltimore Orioles, yeah, for years.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, it's frustrating as a fan. I feel so powerless, you know, because I see this thing unfolding.
Well, you're at the whim of the organization right now, right? You have to look at the team objectively and say, all right, Corey Clouston, last year of his contract. Brian Murray, last year of his contract. The next hire for this franchise as a general manager is the most important decision that Eugene Melnyk has to make.
Right.
Ever. And you could argue even in the history of this team, it's probably the biggest hire that's ever happened in terms of the direction of this team moving forward. And look at the comments he's made in the recent past. Do you have faith in this guy to do the right thing or make the right hire?
Well, no, he seems like a guy who's drinking the Kool-Aid.
Is he going to rely on his strong business acumen to make an informed decision to bring in a guy who can do a great job, bring fresh ideas to the table, not be loyal, make the tough decisions that need to be made in regards to this team? And I don't know if you can answer that.
No, I agree with you, man. And don't get me wrong. I think my attitude, it echoes a lot of what Sean was saying when we were interviewing him, is I'm eternally grateful to Eugene Melnyk for coming in and buying this team and keeping it in Ottawa and giving it some sort of stability from a financial standpoint. But from a managerial sort of owner standpoint that has to make critical decisions when it comes to hiring general managers and whatnot, I have to honestly tell you, I don't have a whole lot of faith in this guy. And maybe that's because he is misunderstood to a certain extent, and some of his sound bites and whatnot have not always.
Well, maybe it
like
is false bravado, right?
Exactly. I mean, he might just be one of these Mark Cuban type guys. Yeah. It's just, and he might actually be very shrewd and very plugged into the networks, and who knows, right? But I am not tremendously encouraged by what might transpire, and if Brian Murray is allowed, I said it before. If Brian Murray is allowed to continue as the Senators GM, and even if to a certain extent that GM is Tim Murray, which is just more the same, basically, same school of thought, everything, through this trade deadline, I don't think it's going to be good at all.
If this team is in a situation where they decide that they're going to rebuild, it can't wait until the summertime. The fans in this city need disclosure, and they need to know what the direction of this team is moving forward, because it's one of those situations where they need direction to be educated as to what's happening. No one's going to re-up their season ticket packages to support the status quo. And I think the low attendance figures that we're seeing right now are indicative of that. And it's only going to get worse. If you come full front to the fans and say, listen, we're going to rebuild this team the proper way. We've already got a good group of defensemen in the system. We have a goaltender who we believe is going to be a great goaltender for this organization. All we're missing is a couple of forward prospects. Hopefully this process won't take as long as it has in other cities. You could turn this thing around within a year or two.
Yeah.
It could be a Colorado season.
But they have to make those
well,
tough
they have
decisions.
They have to hit home runs. And yeah, they do have to make some tough decisions.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not impossible, right? It's not inconceivable that you can turn the thing around in a year or two, especially given how poor the Eastern Conference is, right?
Ottawa's vets have performed so poorly that replacing any of these guys shouldn't be a task. It shouldn't be that hard.
No, that's true. And I mean, I remember I went to the Heatley game the other night. I went with my dad, and I was riding with him. And he's not a season tickets holder, but he has a flex pack or whatnot. And I mean, he's saying a lot of the same things. Like,
how much longer do we have to tolerate watching guys like Nick Foligno and some of these other guys wear the uniform and nothing to get excited about? Just status quo, boring hockey. Boring, boring, boring hockey.
Complacency, man. That's what you get. You get what you pay for.
I think you're right. I think the time is right that you could sell a rebuild to the fan base. Hey, it's been 3 years since 2007. We really thought we had a core to build off of after a run to the Stanley Cup.
And that's all you have to say.
Unfortunately, it has not worked out.
Yeah. You gave them every opportunity to turn it around.
We're going to go in a different direction.
Yeah. And that's all you have to say. And if Daniel Alfredson and Chris Phillips want to go play for a Stanley Cup contender, extend them that opportunity. And, you know, you thank them. Thank you for the service time. But if they want to go play for a winner, you got to build for the future. You can't stay loyal to all these guys for as long as it is. Like, if Alfredson wants out, it's no different than Ray Bourque wanting out in Boston.
No, but Alfredson's never going to be the type of guy who's going to publicly make that known. But if they approach, I mean, if he was favorable to the idea of waiving his no trade clause to go play for a contender, I think that is something that you really seriously explore. Because Daniel Alfredson, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I'm saying that he's not going to get another serious opportunity at the Stanley Cup so long as he remains in an Ottawa Senators uniform.
No, that's fair.
And so, I mean, it's all well and good. As much as, you know, he's my favorite Senator, probably will be my favorite all-time Senator, and as much as I want to see him finish his career here, from a franchise standpoint, and to a certain extent have another opportunity to win, I'd be very favorable to exploring that possibility. But then again, I mean, who knows how realistic that possibility is. One of the model franchises that you and I always rave about is the New England Patriots, right, in football. And they went on their run. What was it, 3 Super Bowls in 4 years? Look at all of the so-called core guys that they either lost or made tough decisions on and moved. Seymour, Vrabel, Brewski, Seau, Moss. It goes on and on and on. Deion Branch wanted a huge contract after the Super Bowl against the Eagles. And they told him, yeah, that's fine. Go ahead. Look who's back now. Restructure his contract to come back with that organization. Look who probably the best team in football right now is. New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was miserable in Seattle.
So,
grass isn't always greener on the other side. Look at Randy Moss with Minnesota. Look at his press conference after that one Minnesota game where he had a shout out to Belichick in hopes that he would get picked up again.
Exactly. And that's an issue where you had a team who had tremendous success with a certain core, but realized that moving forward, it was probably not a shrewd move to move ahead with that core of players, and it wouldn't ensure that team competitive success in the next few years. And they made some moves, and look where they are now. They're right back 2 years later, 2 years, 3 years later, after so-called being on a decline. And they hammered the Jets, and they're looking great right now. So, just an example from another sport where if you have a team that's well-managed, mind you, Robert Kraft is a phenomenal owner, but I won't get into that. But, you know, just an example from another sport where if you have a team that's well-managed, that's not afraid to make some tough decisions and bite the bullet on certain guys, and that drafts well to a certain extent.
Well, it's like Tampa Bay. It's Tampa Bay in the AL East, right? Look at the Rays. Andrew Friedman runs a tight ship. He knows that he doesn't have the budget to compete with the Yankees and the Red Sox, so he builds. When guys get to their peak value and they have to leave, he's okay with it. It's just the cyclical nature of sports. You're not always going to be on top, and I think the faster that Eugene Melnyk and Brian Murray and the rest of the spinsters in the Senators' brass realize that, the better we'll all be. We'll stop being treated as stupid fans.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm getting slapped in the face.
Yeah, a little bit. It feels like we're actually being treated stupidly.
Like, do they not think I watch these games and see what the hell the product is out on the ice? It's garbage.
Yeah, and then you have Corey Kluster making comments about Kovalev.
It's just,
it lends itself to that, right?
Yeah.
And it's a giant slap in the face. That's a great note to end on. All right, man. Well, before we leave, a big shout out to Sean McIndoe from Down Goes Brown for coming on the show.
That was quite a sick
interview. We enjoyed that. That was fun. And Tim, get better soon. I know you're feeling sick. And Francois, been a pleasure, man.
Man, it's been great. And hopefully things will get better sooner rather than later.
Well put, well put. All right. Thanks for listening, Sens fans. Check you next week.